pains and challenges us to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone. From the county farm, another man done gone.
Turn around.
A jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
Come on, get that set.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice, that's what you find, just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Hello and good morning to you, and welcome to Crossroads. We appreciate you tuning in every Tuesday. And believe me, everywhere Martine and I go, we run into people who listen to the show on a regular basis. I want to thank all of you from all walks of life, all nationalities and color. We've been getting a tremendous response, particularly last week when they thought that we were taken off the air, when we were preempted for a special program coming out of headquarters. Of the national office. So we were not kicked off the air. We were just preempted. So just stay tuned, because we've been coming to you for 17 years. And we mentioned last month was our 17th year. The show was started by George Archie Childs, a member of the Inner Voices and a good friend of ours. So our hats off to George Archie Childs for starting Crossroads, which began 17 years ago. So thank you, Archie. This morning we opened up what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. The grapevine. A matter of life, the scope and impact of life and long-term imprisonment in the United States. One in six people in prison, nearly 200,000 people nationwide, are serving life sentences. Incarceration and crime, a weak relationship. Nearly 50 U.S. states have reduced both incarceration rate and crime in the last decade. But yet, we don't. This uptick in the punishment and the harsh laws that are coming down from Congress and state legislatures across the country does not reflect that the states have shown a reduction in both incarceration rate and crime, but yet the laws are coming back out to be more punitive than ever before. Favorable views of Supreme Court remain near historic low. Half of Americans currently hold an unfavorable opinion of the Supreme Court, while roughly as many view the court favorably. Although opinions of the court have been relatively stable over the last few years, favorable views remain close to a three-decade low. And I just want to throw this in that it is hard getting your case in front of the Supreme Court, but yet the president and his owners and all his cases have been going back and forth to the Supreme Court. Like there's a turnstile. They can go to the Supreme Court, and you and I have to wait years before, if we're even lucky enough to have your case entertained by the Supreme Court. I've never seen the Supreme Court entertain so many cases by the president in a matter of weeks and months. And you, for those in prison waiting on death row and them long-term sentences, you in prison for years if the Supreme Court decide to hear your case. So something needs to be done about this. New data exposes deepening racial and ethnic disparities in the youth justice system nationwide. The Sentencing Project released a series of briefs revealing a disturbing resurgence in youth incarceration and widened racial disparities as of 2023, just as the Trump administration's call for increased criminalization of our youth. Man, we got to cut this out. Black youth incarceration, 46% of youth in placement are black, even though the black youth comprise only 15% of all youth in the United States. We make up 46% of those in incarceration. Black youth are 5.5 times as likely to be incarcerated than white youth. And the black-white racial disparities in youth incarceration grew more than 10% in 23 states. Nebraska has the highest black youth incarceration rate and the second highest black-white disparity and the third fastest growing disparity over the past decade. And listen to this, West Virginia ranks second in black youth incarceration. Also, I just want to mention that the Union Temple, under the direction of Sister Anika Wilson Brown, is having this mini unit fest, and it's jumping off, and they're meeting every Monday, but this week, Thursday, for all returning citizens, organizations, people support returning citizens, want to do something about what's going on. We are tired of talking here at Crossroads, so here's something that's being done. If you want to participate in the Million Man March Revival and the Unit Fest that's being held all this month, is October, from October the 12th, there's a prayer for the city, a torch run on Monday, October the 13th, and you can relive the spirit of the historic Million Man March, the beloved Unit Fest, Thursday, October the 16th. So this Thursday at 6 o'clock, if you want to zoom in, call and zoom in on this crucial meeting, people calling in from all over the country to be a part of this UniFest and Million Man March Revival. So at 6 o'clock this Thursday, you can zoom in. Here's a number to call for the correct Zoom number. Call 240-604-0190. I'll repeat. 240-604-0190. Call that number for the correct Zoom information if you want to participate in this meeting on Thursday, 6 o'clock. We're calling all returning citizens, families, friends, associates, business operators, nonprofits who are concerned with bringing people back out into the community and getting a fair shake. Please call. We need your help and support. We want to make this something that we all would be proud of. But more than that, we're talking about doing some concrete action. There's a march, rally, prayer, breakfast, everything. Call that number that we just gave you to participate in this event on this Thursday at 6 o'clock, 240-604-0190. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. Our topic this morning is returning citizens unite against infringement on district law. More than a dozen bills making their way through the U.S. House challenges district home rule by, among other things, making the D.C. attorney a presidential appointee, extending the congressional approval period for locally approved laws, and allowing 14-year-old offenders to be charged as adults. Folk, I am tired. Why are our kids being singled out for these impossible sentences? And this morning, we have joining us a young man who's been out 22 years. He did 22 years in prison. And he's working with the Sentencing Project, the Georgetown Law Project, and the brother is one of them. I think he received benefit from the IRA, the Inmate Reduction Act. He was a youngster when he went to prison in 17 or 18, and when he came out, he lucky this law was passed in order for him to come out. So our guest will be Warren Allen. We're waiting on him to get his Zoom connected. But good morning, Nikisha Taifa. We love having you on board with us. Okay, he's already. Good morning, Nikisha.
Good morning, Boach Brown. Good morning, Martine. Are we glad to be with you on Tuesdays?
Yeah. And we love having you with us, Nikisha. We don't know what we'd do without you, lady.
So let me just say something, Boach, just before we bring on the guest, if I may. I tuned in a little late, so I don't know if you mentioned it, but if we can just have a very, very quick couple of seconds of silence for Asafa Shakur in memoriam for our dear sister who was a political prisoner who escaped on a modern day underground railroad and died free, in Cuba. She never was captured. So if we can just have a couple of seconds of silence. Yes. Okay, back to you, Roach. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Nikishi, because Assata Shakur was the aunt or godmother of Tupac Shakur. And we followed her case way back there in the 70s when she left the States and went to Cuba. And I'm so glad that she died free, not incarcerated. So our hat is off to the Shakur family, Assata Shakur. She was a warrior, a fighter, an activist, and somebody who stood up for our rights and our community. So may the powers that be open their arms and welcome her into the folds of heaven. Good morning, and thank you, Assata Shakur, for what you've did for us. Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that, Nikishi. Our guest now is Warren Allen. Al, you there, brother?
Yes, sir.
Oh, man, it's good hearing your voice.
Yes, sir. Top of the morning.
We have Warren Allen. You want to give us a little brief background on how much time you did and how you got released? Give us a little brief synopsis of that, would you, so we can start our show.
Well, yes, you know, good morning, everyone. My name is Warren Allen. I am a recipient of the Incarceration Reduction Amendment Act. I served over 2 decades in federal prison for my crime.
And how old were you when you went in?
I was actually 17 years of age.
You were 17, and how old was you when you were released?
I was actually 38 when I got released.
So you went into 17 and come out at 38. Your whole life was over, man.
39. Yep.
Okay, the reason why we're doing this show this morning is called Returning Citizens Unite Against Infringement on District Laws. There was a meeting at the city council last week, and a lot of folks showed up to protest some of the unfair things that's being done, and especially targeting our youth to reduce the age to 14 to take him to trial as adults. You were 17 when you went in, and how much time did they give you?
Oh, I was actually sentenced to 35 years of life.
At 17 years old?
Yeah, 17 years old, I was sentenced to 35 years of life. You know, the trial was kind of a whitewash, you know. It wasn't fair at all, you know, us being incompetent to law and things of that nature. You know, we wasn't educated to law, so, you know, we pretty much, you know, went in and got railroaded. But, you know, actually learned from those mistakes and, you know, looking to push forward.
So you were a recipient of the IRA Act, the Inmate Reduction Act.
Yes, the Incarceration.
Correct?
Yes, the Incarceration Reduction Amendment Act, you know, which was brought on by the D.C. City Council, because more importantly, IRA came under Miller versus Alabama, which is actually a Supreme Court case, which states that it's unfair to sentence juveniles as adults.
Yes.
It was a Supreme Court case. So once, yes, sir.
17. Go ahead. And in fact, there's an article in the Washington Informer last week about the returning citizens unite against infringement on district laws. And you were one of the people down there. And we had quite a few people we spoke to who attended this hearing. What was your take on this hearing about this infringement on district laws? You've been out 5 years. You served 22 years in prison, went in at 17 years old. And you come out and you're getting involved in trying to improve the situation. So what's your take on what happened at the city council last week on this this hearing with the Bowser administration yet to speak directly about the IRA and the Second Look Amendment Act?
Well, you know, this came about, you know, due to, you know, Donald Trump, and this is not a campaign against Donald Trump or Mario Bowser. You know, we would like, you know, for those individuals to reach out and, you know, continue to support IRA reform. But more importantly, it was a mock-up hearing. It was a mock-up hearing. And a lot of the things that they brought on, the Democratic senators, you know, spoke, you know, strongly in our favor. Eleanor Holmes Norton spoke strongly in our favor. But, you know, the individuals on the other side of the aisle, you know, they spoke their justice as well. It was sad to hear some of the things that they were saying about the Youth Reduction Act, you know, which is the YRIA, and actually, you know, wanting to establish a, you know, a president you know, to sentence these individuals, adults, as adults, even when they're 14 years old and things of that nature. But this is a direct, you know, I say indication of what's been going on youth-wise in the city and things of that nature. It's not fair, you know, it's coming from a, you know, a small lens, you know, of things, you know, they're projecting things on the public, you know, that's, you know, totally biased. Mm-hmm. And, I believe that the system that's in play for the youth, is strict enough. And also, I believe that we just need more wraparound services, you know, for youths and things of that nature so they can have more of a wholesome life. You know, things they can wake up and look forward to, you know, outside, you know, waking up to a block, you know, that has no resources. So instead of investing that money into incarcerating them, invest that money into some youth resources. But with the Incarceration Reduction Amendment Act, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
With the Incarceration Reduction Amendment Act, see, juveniles, we aged out of crime. You know, we've aged out of crime, and it's a thing called a diminished culpability. Once you're young and you're coming up, you know, without the proper guides and things of that nature, you know, you are doomed to make, you know, the wrong mistakes. And back to what I was saying, without the proper resources. And when I'll say that attack happened, you know, against that DOGE employee, that's when things really intensified. And it kind of became a fire drill. Like, let's go at all the marginalized people, all the people who still searching for hope, like, you know, individuals who's under the YRA and the Incarceration Reduction Amendment Act. So when we went out to support IRA, you know, not only for us who's actually out here doing what we're supposed to do, but more importantly for the guys who are inside that deserve another opportunity as well. Because we're out here, we're fathers, you know, we're HVAC employees, we're business owners, we're community activists. You know, we add to the economy. You know, we're not just out here, you know, twiddling our thumbs. You know,
right. you know one of the things that get me, last week, Congress in the House of Representatives passed a law which says that they opted to proactively nullify, cancel, reduce, and restrict or eliminate, erases any possibility for future juvenile offenders to petition error for their early release. You receive your freedom under the IRA Act. Now, Congress just passed the law last week and saying that nobody else will be eligible, and this thing has been taken off of the book. This is one of these unfair examples of what's happened. Here's a man who was in prison and went in at 17, did 22 years, came out when he was 38 years old as a recipient of the Incarcerated Reduction Act, the IRA Act. And now he's out working, taking care of his family, going to school, working with the Sentencing Project, the Georgetown Law School, and a host of other projects. And now this man is out because of that law. And then there's other folks just like our guest, Warren Allen, who need benefit of this same thing. A lot of kids get in trouble at 15, 16, 14. But you don't take away their whole damn life. You know what I mean? Depends on the nature of the offense. But at least give them a second chance. Yeah. The Supreme Court ruled that no kid is supposed to get life as a juvenile. And they have procedures for this kind of thing. So you are a prime example of somebody who got a break. The law benefits you. You're taking advantage of the law. But there's other folks coming behind you. What do you say to those folk who just now was coming behind you to see that they don't have a chance, man, if they're 14 to 15? I don't understand why all over the country legislators are targeting black youth. Black and brown youth are getting 40, 50, 60. Man, it's unbelievable. What would you say to them folk who are listening, in themselves or their mothers and fathers? What would you tell them to do since they killed or erased the IRA Act?
I want to tell them, you know, that it's not, you know, the end of the world, because a fight, you know, is 12 rounds. You know, you can win a round, lose two rounds.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't give up the fight. And also with that, you know, it's individuals like myself and, you know, IRA recipients, you know, different organizations that support IRA, that's that's going to make sure that we do our part, you know, whether it's bill writing, advocating, again, you know, lobbying or whatever we have to do, you know, to make sure Iris stay realistic. But what I want to say to the guys who was incarcerated, that you control your situation, like, with your actions. You know, you have to, you know, understand, you know, that within those confines, it's not easy at all. And I don't think people understand that Ira was not a get-out-of-jail pass. It was not a get-out-of-jail pass. You had to duplicate to the judge, you know, that you was redeemed, you know, through active programming, education, you know, and things of that nature. You have to show something. It's like a ticket. And, you know, proper mitigation, you know, and things of that nature. But what I want to say to those guys, you know, because I still speak with, you know, a lot of them that's, you know, locked up all over the world, all in the, not all over the world, all over the nation in the federal system, is that take the opportunity, you know, to know what the bill suggests and make sure you fit the criteria of those things. And you have to, you know, maintain, you know, consistent contact, you know, with those out here in the community, keeping your ear to the street. Because what I'm hearing about the Incarceration Reduction Amendment Act right now, for those who have filed or has been incarcerated before the bill, you know, was goes into motion, you know, you would still have an opportunity to petition for IRA. But for those who comes after, you know, the bill has been made a law, you won't be able. I'm going to say the probability, okay, because I don't, you know, believe it till I really see it. But however, okay, it's still an opportunity for us to advocate, you know, and just keep the faith.
I want to ask you this. You went in at 17 years old. How much time did he give you? How much did he give you?
35
years. You were 17 years old. You got 35 years. How did you adjust? What was on your mind? You were 17 years old, and you got more time than you were than you've been on this planet living. You were 17, and they gave you 35 years. How did you wrap your head around this? What did you do to come to grips with that?
Well, you know, the first thing I say, you know, it's hard to be normal in an abnormal environment.
You know, boy, you said it right that time. Yes. Yes.
And you have to adjust to the environment. And what the environment suggests is very adversarial. It's confrontational. You know, the things that they deem to be rehabilitation is far from it. Is no place where, you know, you can actually go get some healing, you know, to actually deal with the problem that you had or the situation that you had going into prison, you know. So it's kind of like you're out of the frying pan right into the fire, right? And like they say, once in Rome, you do what the Romans do. So it was a huge adjustment. You know, it's an environment where, you know, I don't suggest anyone can actually say, oh, this is how it's supposed to go, or this is what I do. No, because the environment creates the complexion, and then it's so egotistical as well. Like, you know, everyone has their own, you know, what they call cars that they sit in. If you're from this specific state, or, you know, you repping this specific game, you know, it's lines drawn all through it. So it's really a respect thing, more importantly, and then also it's a place where you have to reconcile with certain things that you've done, you know, to put you in that position. And also you have to find an effective way, you know, to maintain some sort of family support. So all those things mixed together, you know, without the proper, you know, tools that you would need navigate that situation. And being a Washington D.C. Resident, you know,
did you have any family support, man, while you were away? Was your family with you while you was inside, and was any family member available when you came out? What kind of family support did you have while in and out?
Well, my mother, may she rest in peace. I love her dearly. She was my main support. Certain family and friends, you know, sent cards, sent letters, you know, and checked on me from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but after a while, you know, you get used to being so far away from home, because after I left D.C. jail, I was shipped straight to Pennsylvania, you know, and if your family don't got, you know, proper, you know, transportation and things of that nature, or if your family indigent, it'll be very rare, you know, they come, you know, and visit you and things of that nature. You got some of my, you know, some of my friends getting shipped to Kentucky and, you know,
California,
Louisiana, California, all over the world, you know, away from their families, their kids, and their loved ones. So that makes the process even harder for D.C. residents.
Yes.
That was incarcerated in the federal system. So, yeah, it's tough. There's no one way to explain it, because many of us, you know, have our stories, but also it's one truth. It's one truth. So, you know, just, you know, sticking to, you know, not only, you know, those things that I spoke of, but also recreating yourself while you're on the inside. And you have to do that, you know, by your own hand, because, you know, the institution might provide the supplies, but you got to put in the action. You know, they're not, you know, the ones who I say redeem or rehabilitate individuals. They don't have the proper processes, you know, that are effective, you know, that can bring an individual back to whole. You know, guys coming in with mental health crisis, you know, neglect issues, drug problems, and there's nothing where you can go, you know, to cure these demons. So, individuals just go back to what they know at times. But the Incarceration Reduction Amendment Act, and for guys like us, you know, who've aged out of crime, who've shown the remorse, even when it wasn't one of the prongs that the court suggested, you know, and also,
I got you.
Yes, sir.
I got you. Go ahead. Keep on. I'm just making little comments, commenting on you. Hey, let me throw this out. Nikichi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here. I'm listening. With it, just, you know, it's just, I'm very astounding what the brother was saying. He said it's hard to be normal in an abnormal situation, and I think he really summed it up perfectly. But Roach, can I just ask him something? Because I worked very closely with an organization that he works with, the Sentencing Project. I know about the Georgetown program, the great work over at Sentencing Project that Kara Gotch and Nicole Porter's doing, and I think William Underwood is still a fellow. I'm not sure. So I just want to ask Warren, I mean, how important was it to have advocacy organizations there on the outside ready and willing to give a chance on someone who's formerly incarcerated? And just what has that experience been working with the advocacy groups like Sentencing Project and the Georgetown program?
See, you know, organizations, you know, truly learned that they had to be adjustable. You know, you have to adjust to the climate of what's going on, and also bringing those people around who can actually push that message. And I believe that the Sentencing Project, you know, they got that part of it. They got that part of it. You know, Kerr Gosh, who is the ED. Yes, Nicole, she works on the voting rights team. And many more of my colleagues who actually, you know, fight against, you know, the ills that, you know, keep us, you know, marginalized, you know, subjugated at times. But more importantly, you know, to have a voice and a platform, you know, that, you know, can reach, you know, many of people is actually a gift. You know, it's a gift. And it's nothing that you want to take for granted. It's nothing that you want to take for granted, you know, but also, you know, I had to make myself back whole in order, well, not back whole, because I was never, you know, at one, you know, due to my pre-incarceration circumstances. But, you know, I had to pour into me in order to have an opportunity like this. It was something that they seen in me in order, you know, for them to want to bring me on. So, you know, I just wasn't a guy just, you know, talking at people. You know, I knew what I was talking about, and I knew what I wanted.
Let me ask you this. William Bill Underwood did 33 years in prison for drugs.
That's my guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's done, and he's a fellow at the Sentencing Project, and he's been on the show a few times, William Underwood.
Wow.
Let me.
Wow, that's my guy.
What pops in my mind is when you came out after 22 years, what was the number one or the first one or two things that you found difficult to adjust or get in line with? What were your biggest obstacles when you came out? What was the first one and two obstacles you encountered? And wait a minute, before you answer that, let me just say this is WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. If you'd like to participate in this discussion, the phone number is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. If you got a question or comment for our guest, Warren Allen or Nkechi or Mertin. So go ahead. You got it, Warren.
Well, again, you know, like one of the biggest things that was in my mind was that are people going to look at me for who I used to be or look at me for the man that I became?
Mm-hmm.
But I had to get that out of my mind because I knew. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, man. You,
right. Oh, okay, okay, okay. Yeah. I knew. I knew that I had to get that out of my mind, you know, due to the fact because I can't worry about how people perceive me to be. I just had to be who I am. And how you change minds through action. You know, you show remorse through action. You know, everything is done through action, you know, because as we know, you know, you can, you know, speak about some things, but if the action don't, you know, correlate with those things, you know, hey, you're going to look untruthful. Not that you're trying to prove anyone else right, you know, I'm trying to prove myself right. Mm-hmm. As simple as that. I'm trying to prove me right. And, you know, when you have, you know, certain oppositions and things of that nature, you know, it just make it more, you know, understandable because no one is going to have a, no one is going to have an unbiased, you know, about you to a certain degree.
Yes,
you know, so,
yes.
So when individuals have those biases, you know, you stick up, you show up, and you be authentically who you are. But more importantly, once you got, I'll say, like a citizen project and, you know, a break-free education, and other organizations that, you know, pour into individuals like myself, you know, to give you that proper, you know, training on how to, you know, re-enter mm-hmm. society, you know, with certain programs like, you know, job resume program, decorum classes, speech classes, tech classes and things of that nature.
I got
so
you.
Those are the things that replenished me to, you know, gain my confidence so I wouldn't be so, marginalized.
We got you. Yeah, we got you. We got you. Know, we'll take our first caller. I think we have a caller on. Mike, do we have our first caller? Come on with it. You're on the air. Question or comment, please.
Good program as usual, man. Listen, two resources I want to suggest. Philip Zimbardo, psychologist who did the program Discovering Psychology, he also did a program on PBS called the Stanford Prison Project. And it talks about how the environment of incarceration impacts both the inmates, but also the character of the people who run the prison. There might be something that people would learn what the whole incarceration experience is like. Second of all, when you have decent people like this who have made it through that hellhole and have been able to turn their lives around and to produce and to develop, it might be good for them to express what might have been made available in their lives that would enable them to avoid the prison experience in the first place. What needs were not being met? Because I'm looking at situations, man, all across the United States where in the black community, they have prisons and people's employment are tied to that. But in other communities, they have hospitals. They have people there with people with skills, processes, and personnel that can assess folks on the front end of their lives, meet their needs so that they can develop and not have to go to prisons. So when you have people on there who are able to achieve and to survive it, it may be good to ask them what might be available to them on the front end of their lives so that they could produce, develop, be good citizens, and not have to go to prison in the first damn place.
Thank you. But that was powerful. You said a couple of powerful things in there, man. I appreciate your call. One of the things that really stands out is you said people come out of prison and you're in prison, so you got to correct your bad behavior. You had to correct what you've done. But the bottom line is, what happens before you broke your law? These guys are unemployed, broke, no job, no home, homeless. Provide those resources at the front end, and we'll have less people going in on the back end. And a lot of times, right. Like I'm saying, you got to get your life right. Your life has been right. Just society ain't been right for you. You haven't been able to adapt or adjust. And it's unfair the way we are treated. We all know what's going on, man. This is Jiggy Boogie all over again. So I appreciate your call. You hit a couple of crucial points, my friend. Nikichi, this is something that you and I have talked about before. We talked about reparations. We talked about how we can do what we can do to reach our youngsters before they get incarcerated. Because this brother did. He was went in at 17 and came out at 38. Man, that is terrible. Your whole life is taken away. I got guys that been in 50. Oh, yeah. Last month, there were three events for returning citizens. One was by ceasefire. We've been having this for every year for 10 or 15, 20 years up on Upshur Street. The next week, there was one over in PG County had an event for returning citizens, and the county executive, Aisha Brayboy, showed up. Then there was another one. So for last month, there were several events, and in Baltimore, there were cookouts, barbecues, rallies, more tons, people coming together who've been inside. And I'm telling you, everybody we met at the Returning Citizens Affair for PG County, hosted by Alonzo Turner Bay, and the county exec showed up. Everybody we talked to, man, did 30, 40, 50 years. I sit there with tears running down my eyes, and all these guys are walking around, and they want to give back. As we've been saying at the top of this show, we have the horses, but we don't have the resources. We need resources. If the resources were provided at the beginning of the situation, a lot of our youngsters need to go in. Please, folk, if you take anything away from this show, stand up, fight, and do whatever we can to save our youth. We're talking about taking 14-year-old kids to court as adults. Man, that ain't right. And they come out at 40, 50, 60 years old. Hello? So yeah. if you want to call in with a question or comment for our guests or the Nikichi, people, please, what they're doing in Congress and what the city council is doing in terms of making it mandatory to take 14-year-old kids to trial as adults. Man, these are babies. They think they men. At 14, you think you got it going on. You don't know nothing.
What the government is doing is criminal. That's what the true criminal is. Right. Not our youth, not our babies, where there need to be resources. They're cutting all of the resources. And, you know, like you say, Boach Martin, all the time, we got to do something about this. You mentioned the cookouts and the, you know, the events at the formerly incarcerated folk are having, all these big events that you've talked about. There's not been one incident, not one negative incident that's happened, despite bringing all the folk, together. I mean, hey, we can do this.
You hit it on the head, Nikichi. All of these three events, there were over at least 8,000 to 10,000 folk at all three events, total. And then nobody get arrested. Was nobody shot, stabbed? And all these men, they paid tremendous prices. They spent decades of their lives in prison.
Men and women.
And on the front line was our good friend, Gwen Levi. Every time we had something, Gwen would show up. She did 17 years in prison. And they took her back in on some little jiggy boogie. So we got folks, people who did decades, and they coming out to risk what time they got left to try to make sure that our other youngsters don't go. Stand up. Speak for our kids. People, they talk about locking up our kids. That means locking up our tomorrows. They are our tomorrows, and they will get them 40, 50, 60 years? Come on, y'all.
Yeah, I want to ask our guest another question, if that's okay.
Yes.
Up all that time. I bumped into Lamont Carey over there at the Congressional Black Caucus from Morca. I served on the board of the Corrections Information Council with Charles Thornton, Donald Isaac, and the like. I'm just curious, how helpful are Morca once folk get out, I guess, and Correction Information Council providing information and resources to D.C. Prisoners who are scattered throughout the federal system? Were any of those resources helpful to you? And if so, how? And if not, what could be done to make sure that they are?
You know, for the most part, those resources was needed and influential, you know, for me. you know, with the process of, you know, getting my Social Security, you know, getting my birth certificate, you know, certain things like, you know, grocery cards and, you know, bus passes and, you know, things of that nature, you know, which was very helpful, you know, coming out when, you know, you don't have, you know, a lot of money, you know, and, you know, you didn't have the proper resources to, you know, like some of us come home, you know, even without a family, or some of us come home and don't even know their Social Security number, you know, so to have Morka, you know, to have Morka around, you know, guide individuals through that process was huge. And I got nothing but good things to say about Morka and Lamont Curry. But, you know, additional things, you know, could be done. Additional things could be done, you know, but that comes down to funding and resources. Like, you know, housing is huge. You know, housing is very huge. Job placement is very huge. Putting individuals around the right company. You know, if, you know, he has some mental health challenges or, you know, maybe some shortcomings, you know, while he's out, you know, kind of, give some funding to him going through the proper channels and resource, not resources programming, you know, to replenish or, you know, to guide him out here while he's out here in society or she's out here in society. Those are some of the things that I'd like, you know, to see a little more of, because those things are important, you know, equivalent to, you know, what you all were saying at first. You know, the statistics, you know, shows when, you know, they're trying to, you know, I say, you know, dim our light. You know, they come and say, well, multiple individuals committed this crime, or last night this heinous crime happened. But, you know, once we're talking about the return of citizens, and once we're talking about, you know, youth offenders and things of that nature, you know, we have to bring in, you know, to atone that an individual that served over, you know, 20 years is not going to be the same person he was 20 years
ago. There you go. And that's right. That's right.
You know, going to these events and, you know, nothing is happening. You know, us as, you know, humanitarians, you know, advocates and things of that nature, you know, we got to speak from our data we know as well, you know, to strengthen your advocacy. But more importantly, we need organizations like Morka and the Corrections Information Council. I remember they came out to, maybe was that Pollock or Allenwood, Pennsylvania, USP I was in? Yeah, I think it was Allenwood, USP, the Correction Information Council came out and, you know, just interviewed a few guys and asked us what was more so going on, you know, how were we being treated, you know, and we was up front about everything. We was up front about how we was being treated. But,
Did you see any when the council came, when the Council for Corrections came out to see y'all and y'all had a little session, have you noticed any changes after the things they suggested? I mean, after the things y'all suggested and recommended, have you noticed any changes in the institution after they left?
I mean, as far as immediate changes, you won't see those immediate changes. But when they know you have individuals coming from D.C., you know, to more so ask questions and things of that nature, you know, they might try to tighten up a little bit, you know, just enough to try to keep you honest. But more importantly, the system is adversarial. The system is adversarial. Those people are going to do what they want and how they want to do it. And that's simple as that. You know, the feds is a different ball game. It's just a total different ball game.
Let me throw you a curve. If you were the warden, If you was the warden, what would you do? If you was in charge of the prison, what would you do to make it better for those guys inside to make sure they're in proper preparation before they come out? If you were in charge of the prison after doing 22 years inside, you seen it, you know it, you learned it, you lived it. What would you do if you were the warden of the institution?
I mean, that's a broad question there. That's real broad, you know, but to keep it as simple as possible, I try to make it a community. That's the best thing that I can try to do. Everything that an individual needs in the community, I would try to have those things there as they're ready. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. And that's just in short. That's just in short. Don't want to elaborate on that.
And I would just ensure that that the institution follows the Constitution of the United States and the Supreme Court cases that have talked about that unique and humane conditions of confinement and all of the reforms that the Attica brothers talked about back then in 1971 as part of the Attica uprising. I would ensure all of those conditions of confinement were adhered to. So I would just add all of that to what the brother said.
You know, in 1960, the Supreme Court Justice Earl Warren, in a landmark decision, ruled that people are sent to prison as punishment, not to be punished. And somehow that connection has been lost. You go to prison now. In preparation for this show today, I noticed there's 133 people that have been killed in prisons across the country. 133 in prisons. And they are dying rapidly. And we got buddies, that some of whom that you know, Warren, who did 40, 50 years, it came out, and they died within 18 months or 2 years in the street. Men and women are coming out of prison and dying rapidly.
Healthcare.
For healthcare and all these kind of things. We'll take another call because I want to hear what our community has to say about this. You're on the air, please. Question or comment?
Good morning, Roach. This is Rick calling from Germany.
Hello, Rick from Germany. We knew you'd be there, buddy. How you doing?
I just want to say that if you don't do the crime, you don't have to do the time. And even if you don't do the crime, racism and white supremacy is gunning for us. But put your hope in God and your family and work your way through it. Trump's America is not going to get better. And the man coming after Trump may be a rotten, low-down Republican. So don't do the crime. And you don't have to do the time. I'm done, Broach.
Thank you.
And I just always want to say, and I say it all the time, Albert Einstein said, it's not the evil that will destroy us, but those of us who do nothing about it. And we know what the great orator Frederick Douglass says, power concedes nothing, but out of demand, it never did and it never will. We have the power, people. Numbers matter. The 13th Amendment, that clause needs to be taken out. Everybody has a job to do, whatever you can do to help us. And numbers matter. We don't have to take this crap that we see going down. But we have to stand up and act like we know who we are.
You know, this is amazing in that we're talking about this and we know what needs to be done. All the studies and analytical reports, etc., prove that there's the reason why they call it projects for people who come out of prison. They live in the projects. It was an experiment. And the reason why they had the project, they wanted to see what happens when they pile people on top of people. And this is where you get all this violent stuff. So that made me look at crabs. They say we're like crabs in a barrel. So I got a bunch of crabs, a bushel, and put them in a pot, put them on the stove. Put some hot pepper on it, put some beer in there, turn the flame up and put a pot on top, a lid on top of it, and the crab starts scrambling trying to get out of there. If you're on fire, you want out of the fire. We got people who grow up in fire. The house is on fire. They don't have a home. They're living in the streets. Then we tell them you need to correct your behavior. How in the hell you can correct your behavior in society demands that when you get locked up, you got to pay your price. Society demands that you pay for your actions. What do we do when society commits a crime against us? How do we demand society correct its actions against us? Folks, people are not born crooks. They're not born them. And the crime rate is going to skyrocket. With these new laws coming down, with the bringing in the National Guard in these neighborhoods. In fact, we had a program Saturday with another returning citizens program at New York Avenue Presbyterian Church, our good friend Ann LaRouche's church. And believe me, those folk, man, are fighting. They're trying to do whatever they got to do to help each other. So we need to treat each other. There's one way to solve all this. Treat somebody how you want to be treated, period. Definitely. Stop all the jiggy-boogie. You can treat somebody how you want to be treated. We got to go. But folks, please, say something, do something for our youngsters. They're talking about locking up Al Tomorrow. Our kid's 14 years. This brother did 17 years old and gave him 35 years. Baby, that's more time than you've been living. And you got out black kids. were being under attack all over the country. All these state legislators said, let's get the kids off the street. Give them jobs. Give them programs. Give them wraparound services. And you watch the crime rate go down. It's already going down all over the country. Crime and violence is going down all over. But yet we're coming in with more laws, more restrictive, repressive laws to lock up our youth. Please, don't take what we say lightly. This is Al Tomaras. And again, when I mentioned about that thing with Reverend Willie Wilson and Unifest, I made a mistake. What I suggest is you call that number that we gave you, and they give you all the information on the activities and events. I'm not allowed to tell you to go and do nothing. What I'm saying is call this number to get information on the events, the days, the activities, how you can participate. And that's what it, where it is. We got a few minutes ago.
Institute of the Black World with Ron Daniels and Ron Hampton.
Yeah, that was four events. So every weekend, people, there's some activity in this city, in Baltimore, in PG County, that's working on trying to see what they can do to give us a fair shake for them people coming out of prison. And one of the things is, man, some of these laws, some of the guys that did 40 years, one guy did 40, came out, and he had a house. He couldn't go to his house because his wife or his mother then was on welfare. He had a sex offense. So his house was about 75 yards from the school. He couldn't go home, a home that he grew up in, because of these restrictions and collateral consequences that impacted on his eyes. And you're telling somebody that it's like giving somebody a gun made by Mattel and put them on the front line over there in with Israel and Gaza and tell them to fight, and you got a water gun. And they said, hey,
and also, folks, you know, what happens is that those January 6th insurrectionists that stormed the U.S. Capitol were given pardons. They were let out of prison, given pardons. Yet we have our people, our youth like Warren, who have been in prison, I forgot how many years, 20-something. 22 years. And I know he don't have no pardon. You know what I'm saying? So something's got to be done about this jukey boogie, like you said.
You know, one of the things we found out Saturday is that the National Guard has been deployed here in Washington, D.C. They're downtown by Union Station, the White House, and the Monument. And I talked to some people in Ward 8.
Denise Roebuck Bond.
In Ward 8. And the crime rate, the most crime-ridden part of the city is Ward 7 and Ward 8. And she said they haven't seen the National Guard in those areas where the high crime rate is high. They're downtown where there's less crime. If you can bring in the National Guard, and we say that the crime is off the chain, and all the stats prove otherwise, and nobody in Southeast has seen the National Guard walking through their neighborhoods where the majority of the crime or the violent crime is happening. What's going on? They playing the shell game with us. Now you see it, now you don't. We got to cut this jiggy boogie out, and people, you need to take a stand. We need to say something to make sure that your word, your views are heard. Because this is our kids. You don't have to know these kids. They're ours. I don't care what color they are. Kids are kids are kids. And they do foolish, stupid things. But don't punish them for the next 40, 50 years for what they did yesterday. Leave some kind of option or avenue where they can redeem themselves. And they talk about rehabilitation. That's a joke. Rehabilitation means, look at Webster, to restore one to his original form or capacity. So if I was a bank robber before I went in, I'm a bank robber when I come out. It don't. Rehabilitation is just more jiggy boogie. Treat people how you want to be treated is what we say. Well, Nikita, you got anything else before we wrap up? Because Warren, give us some closing, your closing statement, Warren, about what you've seen, what you're going through, what needs to be done. And just tell us a little bit about, here's my closing statements from Warren Allen, who did 22 years in prison. He went in at 17 years old. Now he's in his 30s, 38. Come on. We got 2 minutes,
Take one, Warren.
Come on.
First and foremost, I say, you know, sometimes once you shoot for the moon and you miss, you'll still be amongst the stars. Everybody need to know that giving up is not an option.
Yeah.
You know, giving up, seriously, man, giving up is not an option.
There you go.
It's not an option. Yeah. And you really can't, you know, you just got to understand individuals' ideals and, you know, how they think. And basically what side of the aisle they're on.
You know,
there you go.
You have to know who you are as an individual. What you advocate
Thank you.
For, what you standing for family-wise, work-wise, just in life in general.
There you go. Man, we take our hat off to you, man. You went through holy hell and you came out and you're giving back. It's something we always say, that we have the horses, but we don't have the resources. You're one of the horses that we have. Everybody's there. So please, stay in tune. Do what you can to help somebody to get out of this foolishness. This is Crossroads you've been listening to. Mertine and Nikichi Taifa has been our host. And our guest has been Warren Allen. And the topic has been Returning Citizens Unite Against Infringement on District Laws. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. This is Roach Brown and Mertine. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas. Just won't rent.
I go to bed, but my sleep just won't come. My belly's empty and my brain is numb.
The Can I Kick It outdoor summer movie series presented by Shaolin Jazz is back and is coming to Southeast DC for the first time ever. Enjoy 3 nights of martial arts and action films scored live with hip hop, soul, and more, mixed by WPFW alum DJ Two Tone Jones. Then on Saturday, October 25th, the series concludes with the screening of I'm Gonna Get You Sucker at the Capitol Hill Boys Club Artist Gallery. Each event begins at 7 p.m. with a guest DJ set, followed by the movie at 8:30 p.m. Blankets and lawn chairs are welcome. For more details, visit shaolinjazz.com. shaolinjazz.com.
Are you in the process of writing or updating your will, trust, or estate plan? We invite you to consider adding WPFW as a beneficiary through a charitable bequest. Bequests can take many forms and are usually the largest and most impactful gift a donor will ever make. Your bequest will help to ensure the programming WPFW has provided for almost 50 years will continue into the future. More info available by email at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or by phone at 202-588-0999, extension 344. Or you can let us know you've already included PFW in your plans through those same channels so we can add your name to our growing list of legacy listeners. We are listener supported. We are Jazz and Justice. And because of your support, we are WPFW.
Attention all parents and youth in the Washington, D.C. area. Looking for a creative, inspiring after-school program? The Word Speeds and Life Academy in Columbia Heights fall session begins September 22nd. For ages 8 to 18, we offer classes in poetry, DJing, graffiti art, college prep, and more. Elementary classes are Mondays and Tuesdays, with youth and young adults on Wednesdays, 3:30 to 6 p.m. Located at 1525 Newton Street Northwest in Columbia Heights, starting September 22nd. It's the Words, Beats, and Life After School Academy. More info at wblinc.org/academy.
All right.
WPFW has offered inspiring music, poignant stories, and critical journalism for over 48 years. Whether reminiscing while hearing Nina Simone or learning about the harm done due to gross global inequity, WPFW has been the soundtrack for moments of revelation, joy, sadness, and resistance. It's your generosity that allows us to continue this tradition of expansive, emancipatory excellence in community radio. We ask you to once again be in solidarity with WPFW during our fall pledge drive by donating at WPFWFM.org and additionally from October 12th through the 25th at 800-222-9733. 1-800-273-8539. There is only one WPFW and only one you, the listener, who is committed to keeping independent music and message available to the people. Your generosity sustains and challenges us to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
On Tuesday, October 7, 5 a.m. until midnight, WPFW presents What Breaks the Heart, joining millions around the world and marking 2 years of genocide in Gaza. Through interviews, stories and poetry, the day programming will reflect the cultural and political concept of Palestinian Sumud, highlighting the enduring presence, resistance and connection of the Palestinian people to their land. That's What Breaks the Heart.